Hello,
Hello.
by the way, I don't know if you have heard yet, but you can speak on desktop now.
Oh, you can? That is, I totally missed that. When did they fix that?
So I don't know, but I found out at our last space with Nick and Becca, and they made it sound like it had been for a while. They were very surprised. I didn't know.
We've been burned so badly with all the past guests who tried to join via desktop. They were like, just don't go there. And then found out they couldn't speak. And then we couldn't figure out why they weren't able to come up. So we just you never get a second chance to make a first impression. So maybe I should give it another whirl. That's useful news. Well, let's maybe start welcoming folks to JavaScript Jam. You wanna just kick us off?
Yeah, this is JavaScript Jam, our bi-weekly Twitter space where we talk about the JavaScript news of the week. My name is Anthony Campolo. I am a developer advocate at Edgio.
And I am Ishan Nand. I'm the VP of the applications platform at Edgio. And JavaScript Jam, we like to think of as an open mic for everything, JavaScript or web development related. So that's why we host it on Twitter Spaces. So Anthony does send out a newsletter, which I encourage you to go subscribe. You can go to javascriptjam.com and click the link to subscribe. And he gives a really great rundown of the happenings in JavaScript land and web development for the past 2 weeks. And we often talk about what's in the newsletter, but I love it when it's audience driven. Some of our best conversations, in fact, have been when the audience decide to bring up a topic completely not on the agenda. And even better, somebody else in the audience had the answer. Those are some of my favorite moments. And that's when I get the most and learn the most from this. And hopefully the audience does too.
Yeah, for sure. I got the newsletter pinned up to the Jumbotron right now. Got a couple of topics this week. One that I was really curious to get your thoughts on, if you've heard anything about this new Amazon runtime, LLRT.
I saw that. I saw the GitHub repo. Looked a little bit about it. We've actually discussed it a little bit here as well, because we obviously have we have a variety of environments we run JavaScript in. In fact, going back at our prior company, which was MoveWeb slash Layer Zero, we actually built out our own serverless like cloud before Lambda even existed. Well, actually, it was being built at the same time Lambda was being built. So they basically kind of came out around the same time. And at the time, Lambda wasn't, performant enough for serving web requests because of cold starts. Now, since Lambda came out, it's gotten a lot better. But we used to go through a lot of hoops to essentially create a serverless JavaScript environment that had very little cold starts. And we would do all sorts of things to optimize its performance, including spinning up stuff and keeping them in kind of a quiescent state and then waking them up really strategically in order to maximize, or rather maximize the performance and minimize the cold starts. And so there's, this trade-off that you've got in serverless environments that they're really super convenient. You don't have servers to manage. But the trade-off is that if you get an increase in demand or requests above a certain baseline, then eventually there are servers that need to be spun up, and the system has to go find new computers and new processes it has to spin up in order to handle the additional capacity. And so those are what we call cold starts, and that causes delay. And so what this new runtime uses, LLRT, is instead of, say, spinning up a full node instance to handle JavaScript requests, they are using this runtime that's written in Rust called QuickJS, which we've actually used in our edge functions ourselves for
Yeah, that
implementing
was one of the things I
JavaScript.
was going to be curious to ask about. I was like, Yes, like how does this relate to edge? Like, is this now like an edge function, or is this a lambda function, or is this something kind of in the middle?
It's in theory you could do it for both. But the practical implication is this is a better runtime probably for edge functions than it is for what we call in our platform cloud functions. So an edge function typically runs very, very short and needs a very short cold start. And typically they're a lot smaller in size and memory requirements. They're doing things like say they validate a JWT token to make sure you have access to the upstream request. Or maybe you've built some like security feature on top of it, or the types of things you might use in what Nextland they call middleware, right? Very short, quick requests. Sorry, quick processing of requests before it gets processed fully by something else. You could even do things like redirects inside them. But essentially, there's not a lot of memory usage, and you want them to run as fast as possible. And that's because every single request potentially could get, this edge function or this middleware run on top of it. And if you think about the average web page, you can have 10 to 100 different requests making up the web page, and each one gets a little bit of latency, it's just going to accumulate. And so the cloud function use case is like your classic AWS Lambda. It's you're running this for, maybe a couple hundred milliseconds, maybe even a couple minutes. And it's going off and it's maybe aggregating a bunch of APIs together, making a database request, maybe multiple of them. Maybe it's doing things like server-side rendering. So it's taking, your next page and it's turning it into HTML that then gets hydrated back on the client. So those tend to be more long-running, more memory-intensive processes. And they're, classic Lambda is potentially effective. And where it gets really different as an important difference is as it relates to these runtimes, Node or regular Lambda uses the V8 JavaScript engine, which has a JIT, a just-in-time compiler. So as it's running your code, it's figuring out where the slowdowns are, and it's dynamically making those parts faster. It's actually rewriting the code, the assembly code. QuickJS, because it of the way it's written, doesn't do that. And if you actually look at the benchmarks, you can see this right in the benchmarks. And so, I don't know if you'd want to be running a long-running process in a QuickJS LLRT runtime. It kind of isn't what it's used for. It's kind of like,
Why not?
well,
What's the issue
because,
there?
yeah, so you can run it. Well, it'll give you some nice, let's call it safety isolation, but the performance characteristics aren't the ones you're essentially optimizing for. It's like, trying to use a hammer when you should be using a, a screwdriver. So in a long-running process, you pay the cold start once, and then the process continues to run for most of the duration of the lifetime. It's a small percentage of the runtime of that execution. And so you don't care as much about the cold start if this thing's going to be running on the error of minutes, for example. Like let's say it's doing some log processing or something like that. And in that case, especially if, or it's doing SSR and that's being cached out, you don't care about the cold start as much. Now it's directly serving a web request, then you might. But in the context of an edge function, you probably aren't running that for a long time. So even if you had, say, it's kind of the flip side of that. When you're in an edge function, you run it very briefly and it doesn't even run for a long time. So, in theory, the ability of the JIT to optimize that code's runtime isn't going to be, it's not going to have as many opportunities to observe the code's behavior, find loops, and optimize them in a very short running edge function. And there you want a really short runtime. So the question is like, where do you want to take your poison? Where do you want to take your trade-offs? Is it at the beginning and you take a longer cold start, but you're running in a more JIT-like environment? Or is it, in an environment where you're like an edge function where you want to have very short cold starts? And you want to have actually really good, strong isolation, even though you're using these lightweight runtimes. That's something WASM and runtimes like this can provide. So each are kind of fit for a different purpose. I don't find them necessarily as like competing with each other. That being said, we've run our own experiments, and I will say that, the JIT can be useful in some edge functions. We've certainly seen like use cases where, yeah, JIT would have helped. But on the whole, I think like LLRT looks like a useful use case for context than it is for a cloud function. Like, I don't know if you'd want to use this as for like a long running server process. Amazon actually has another engine that they use. So for Lambda, they use Node. They have something called Lambda at Edge, which is Node based, but the cold starts were a bit high. And so they have another JavaScript runtime, which I think they called CloudFront Functions, which actually ran on yet another runtime in order to maximize its safety and its cold starts. Sorry, minimize its cold starts. There's a some of these edge platforms will use what they call V8 isolates to do this, and it's a way to have a fast cold start in a
Is
node
that
type environment.
Firecracker?
Firecracker is different. Firecracker was yet another thing they came out with. But there's some concern in the ecosystem about the level of security guarantees that V8 isolates can give you, where you've got code running from a variety of different customers in a very heterogeneous cloud environment. And so you might want something with stronger security guarantees like WASM gives you. But essentially, this is just, I'd call it another arrow in the quiver for, I don't know, folks like us building the infrastructure for folks to use. That they can kind of play off a different set of trade-offs. So it's really interesting, but it's also worth remembering this is like just came out. It's super experimental. I would say the great thing here is just to see that there continues to be innovation here, and continues to be experimentation. And here it's really great because they were using QuickJS, which is, a lot of people have started using, especially in WASM environments for executing JavaScript because it's written in Rust. And Rust can compile really nicely to WASM. So that's another reason this is really useful.
Yeah, do you?
That's a, I've been talking for a
No,
while, so maybe
I
I
have
should
some
stop.
questions. Yeah, I was curious. Like, how do you feel like this is going to impact projects like Dino or Bun?
It's a good question. My view on this is the value prop of Dino and Bun is a larger surface area than just what LLRT is designed to solve. So if it creates competition for them, it'll probably be by inclusion into something else, if that makes sense. Like there's a lot more to those than there. But there is a kind of indirect competition that it is, another runtime. But I don't really view it as direct competition. Again, it's purely experimental. So I maybe that answers the question. I'll leave it there.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah, I agree with you that it's just cool to see more stuff being put out, especially because, Lambda is something that when it first came out, it was pioneering. It was like this new thing and everyone started using it. And then I feel like there was kind of a long hangover where people couldn't quite get to do exactly what they want, or they tried to get it to do something it probably wasn't really well suited for. And then we've been building all of these new things to try and address those issues. And it's still not really clear, I mean, I think it does seem clear to me that there will not be one thing that will just replace it and be like, this is the new thing, everyone's going to use this now. And it seems like there's going to be a range of things that people are going to either stick with Lambda because it does what they want to do, or they're going to have an issue, and that issue could be startup, it could be, streaming, it could be, length of execution time. There's all sorts of different kind of problems people tend to hit. So I think all of these kind of Lambda extensions, some of them address different pain points. So it's going to kind of depend on like what your pain point is. Is that kind of what you think?
Yeah, I actually the fascinating is maybe taking a different direction. I think that to me the interesting direction here is the fact there's just it used to be there was only Node, and that was really the only well I guess and the browser if you're thinking client side, but on the server Node was the only JavaScript runtime environment in town, and that became an unofficial standard. The Node API layers like people just expect it, and what we've seen. Especially for platforms like ourselves that combine the cloud and edge, but you see this on basically all edge function platforms, that don't have a pure node environment. There's been a lot of work to support, you know, this assumption of just even the node APIs. And I had thought, and we continue to see folks like, you know, Nitro coming from the Nuxt.js guys, or they call it UnJS as well, which is building, you know, applications or frameworks for applications that target a runtime that is much more universal surface area and much more narrow than Node. Doesn't assume it's a Node environment. It assumes as little as possible of the environment it's running, as little, like basically JavaScript and little much else through a very well-defined contract. And we saw that growing, I think, over the last 3 or 4 years. Kind of the frameworks in parallel to all these other runtimes coming out, people realizing, oh, we need to design our frameworks to be essentially runtime agnostic. I think that adoption curve or that migration curve to all these frameworks being more compatible to non-node environments has hit some hiccups over the last 12 months. I've seen other folks in the ecosystem say, some people actually even just saying giving up. And so for me, the really interesting question is, can we move our entire JavaScript ecosystem, at least server side, to this, you know, I'll call this flexible, more compatible runtime environment that doesn't really depend on Node, and it could be any type of light thing. And this is what, you know, these groups like the Winter CG are trying to do, come up with these kind of standardization amongst these lightweight runtimes so that things are a lot more portable, but we're not there yet. It's kind of like what, you know, if you squint what interoperability meant for browsers, we're trying to figure out actually on the server now, you know, a few decades later.
Yeah, it's
I don't know
interesting.
if that answers,
No, yeah, and
yeah.
I think
Go
that
ahead.
this is an interesting kind of extension of that because, you know, the trying to get interop with the browsers, I feel like a lot of that had to do with just standardizing JavaScript, the language itself, or, you know, and CSS and just in general, all the kind of thing, whatever's going to run in the browser, they needed like a spec and a standard. And then once we kind of aligned on a lot of the JavaScript conventions and CSS conventions, it's become easier to have standardization in the browser. And it's been a little more challenging in the back end because there's not really as much, seems like, coordination on the back end prior to Winter CG. And now Winter CG is supposedly going to get us there, but I just don't really hear about it very often. And it doesn't seem to have as much kind of like gravity around it as like the every year you'd have, you know, your ECMA stuff come out and people would be like, oh, what are the new JavaScript things coming out? But as far as I can tell, there's no like yearly cadence with Winter CG. You know, maybe once they, you know, ship V1, there will be some sort of cadence. But yeah, I'm still kind of not really sure whether that's going to really be the thing we can rally around or not. You know, if it's not, then we're kind of, you know, screwed because there's not going to be anything else that's going to present itself as the solution. So I hope that it eventually, you know, bears some fruit.
Yeah, I think you don't hear about it partially because it's a smaller audience. Like it doesn't affect users directly. You don't you like if your app doesn't work because your backend runtime is incompatible, you don't launch, right? You just you're only your dev team finds out about, but your end users, if like they pull up a browser that doesn't work, they like your end users feel it. Like you've launched already and then they go try it out. It's very visible failure mode. I actually we've just started you know getting more active in what these bodies are doing, so I can't speak from firsthand on their cadence. But I do feel like looking at you know and in the ecosystem folks who are building infrastructure, it does seem like I've seen folks say that there's kind of been a little bit of stalling and on this stream. I do also feel like the work of standardization is it's not just oh we get a spec and we agree to what those things are. I think the browsers actually are really interesting. I don't feel like people know the full story of how like the W3C and the WHATWIG you know split and then they came back together. And the way they approached, standard setting afterwards was much more like, okay, one of the browser vendors has to go implement this and try it out first and demonstrate it working. And you can in theory write a spec, but you really need some way to validate that it works. And you might write a spec that has so much ambiguity that you don't really have a way to validate. And so you might in theory have both two browsers that claim to be, following the spec, but they just interpreted the language slightly differently. So I think a lot of those lessons got learned, and hopefully we'll take those as well in kind of these new runtimes.
Yeah, it reminds me of SQL. Like, there's technically a SQL spec, but it's like an incomplete spec. So every database vendor, or just database in general, will like implement the spec and then
Oh
make
yeah.
some kind of
Yeah,
decisions.
SQL, yeah. Yeah, it's not that you can take some of the simple queries, but yeah, it won't necessarily be identical. Yeah, that's a good example. But I was just, happy to see continued innovation in this area. What I would really like to see though is more things like what, the Nuxt folks are doing with Nitro, which is more frameworks saying we are targeting a non-node environment, or we're supporting that as a first-class citizen, as a runtime that you can deploy, our applications to. Because I think what's really going to drive innovation here is demand from the front. It's going to be like a cycle, where a feedback cycle where the more frameworks you get like that, the more runtimes will exist, and then the more frameworks will adopt because there are more runtimes for it, and you give your users more options. So that I think would be really cool.
Yeah, I've only ever used Nitro in like a node kind of way. I've never used it otherwise. So like, what else can you run with Nitro?
I believe it'll run. Oh, you could run the same types of jobs and applications. It's just that you can now deploy to a non-node environment, and it's being handled in a very systematic way.
Interesting. Yeah, I wonder if that's probably one of the
So,
reasons why Ryan used it for Solid Start.
yeah, it gives you in fact, if you go to JavaScript Jam, I think we still have the video on here. If you go to videos, oh, we don't have the Composability Summit videos up still,
I can find it
but
on YouTube.
yeah, Daniel from Nuxt spoke about Nitro in the early days, and it was up on, it should still be up on YouTube. He spoke at our summit a while back. I think that was like a year and a half ago, when Nitro was just getting started. And I saw it, I was like, oh, we definitely need to have you here to speak
Yeah,
about
Nuxt
this.
and the composable web. Here it is.
Yes, exactly. That's the one. So yeah, I definitely recommend folks check that out. So that's the demand side of this equation, the supply side being the LLRT runtimes and the like.
Yeah.
So on the newsletter, the one that jumped out at me. Oh well, we're halfway through. We should do our station break.
Yeah, go for
Okay, yeah. So we're about halfway through. So, reminder: you are listening to JavaScript Jam. JavaScript Jam is a Twitter space and podcast that is run. Well, the space is every 2 weeks, and we put out the podcast sometimes with additional interviews throughout the year. It is designed to be both a podcast but an interactive, we like to say, open mic for anything JavaScript and web development related. So if you go to our website, javascriptjam.com, you can sign up for a newsletter, which Anthony curates and sends out the latest interesting stories from the JavaScript and web development ecosystem, and often is the fodder for what we talk about here. But we like this to be as audience-driven and participatory as possible. So feel free to raise your hand, and we're happy to bring you up to the stage to talk about whatever topic we brought up, or if there's some topic you're curious at or interested in. That's some of the best conversations we've ever had, is when the audience said, hey, I want to talk about X, which is, I just saw on my Twitter feed today, and anything JavaScript related or web development related is on topic. So go to javascriptjam.com, click on newsletter, and and subscribe. And I think you've posted, yeah, you did in the Jumbotron a little bit earlier, the link to this week's newsletter. The item that jumped out at me was the Next.js app router migration from Brandon of Flight Control.
Yeah, I'm glad that jumped at you. I was actually thinking about sending him a message and seeing if we can get him on as a guest to discuss that. Because you'll notice there's actually three separate articles in this week's edition that are all about migrating to the app browser. It's like it's on everyone's mind right now.
It totally is. I had the exact same idea. I saw it. I was like, oh, we should reach out to him to see if he can join today. But that would have been last minute. I think he, not only that, it feels like there's a moment, not just about App Router, but a moment about is either React or Next getting too unwieldy. I'm curious if that's your feeling. I feel that topic is in the wind. At least it's coming through in my feed every once in a while. Like there was a Hacker News post. Feels like every few days, that's basically that sentiment. I don't know if you're getting that as
Well,
well.
yeah, I think you're seeing a lot of people coming out and kind of complaining about React or talking about migrating off of React. And sometimes it's, clear that they're talking about Next and the app router. And sometimes they're still just kind of talking about React. I feel like some people have always wanted to get off of React. There's, like I've talked to lots of people. Like I've always been close to like the Svelte community, and I feel like the Svelte community is kind of like use React as like a rallying cry to use Svelte in general. But there's also now because of server components and because of the changes in React, I feel like they're like seizing the moment and seeing like, oh, this is a good time to like try and push other frameworks. But at the same time, as people who are all in on React, they want to be using React. But they're not really quite on board with Next and the app router yet. So they're also kind of pushing back on that. And so it's not always entirely obvious where people are coming from and whether their critique is with React proper or with the specific implementation of React. And then also you see like the Remix crowd is coming in and kind of trying to seize the moment also and be like, hey, this is the time to migrate to Remix. And some people are like, hey, you should migrate to another React framework, or you should migrate off React entirely. So I think everyone knows that there's like pain in the ecosystem right now and are trying to kind of capitalize on that, which is like one, like kind of skeevy, but also like, and this is how open source works, So I think this is what I don't like is when people like attack the React team and like make it real personal. Like that
Oh
always
yeah,
kind of bothers
I
me.
agree.
And Brandon definitely does not do that. So I think Brandon, I think, wrote a very fair article that like just kind of lays it all out, and I thought he did a really fantastic job.
Yeah, for those who haven't read the article, I guess, maybe we can just briefly summarize it. He basically like the punchline is at the end where he said, had I to do it over again, it's right here. It's the headline in the last paragraph or the last section. We'd go if we could go back and choose Remix if we could. And he said, aside from much better dev performance, I think it has better architecture and abstraction. For example, with Remix, the user owns the client and the server entry points, but Next.js owns everything, preventing you from doing anything they don't explicitly allow unless you use NPM patches, which we've consistently had to do. His conclusion at the end is here are the things that were good, here are the things that didn't work. In particular, he felt like RSC wasn't as stable as maybe they were led to believe. Now, granted, they started this. When it was the year? They started a while ago. I think it was in April. Let's see if we can. I remember reading it. Yes. So they started in April 2023. And they looked at Next App Router, Remix, TanStack Router, and React Server Components and App Router seemed like it was the future. And they, back then, from what I've, the vibes I read, it's a lot better than it was back then.
Vibe-driven development.
Yeah, exactly. Vibe driven is also how you do evaluate large language models too nowadays, because everyone just puts the test data in the training set. But Yeah, so it was basically the end of the article is here are the things that worked well, here's that didn't, but overall they would not have done it this way again if they had to. So I was kind of surprised by that, especially given that, like Brandon is no slouch when it came to Next, right?
Yeah, Pass like
And Blitz.
one of the biggest
Yeah,
Next
exactly.
experts in the world. Yeah, so it says a lot
Yeah.
that even he would find it too complicated. Like if someone who built a meta framework on top of Next still thinks it's too complicated, that's pretty damning.
Yeah, that was I was really surprised to see that. So it sounds like you were just as shocked too. So that to me I thought was surprising. I do you get the feeling that that he started basically about a year ago. It certainly sounds like it's come a long way, and somebody starting now would not have as many pain points, but I don't know. Like what was your interpretation of
Well,
and takeaway from
I
his
think it still
yeah.
depends on like he's building a serious production app that's being used for deployments and has to really work very specifically. Whereas other, I think it really just depends on your use case. I think as these new paradigms come out, they're never going to be able to handle every edge case, and it's just going to take time as the community builds out more things with it. They're going to find more edge cases. The core team will patch those. They'll figure out ways to explain how to use these things in the docs. So I think, don't use, bleeding edge technology if you don't want to bleed. That's really what I think it comes down to with stuff like this. I think, there some people can quibble with whether it was accurately depicted in terms of how close it was to being ready, or whether it was beta, or whether it should be canary. There's that whole argument about whether it should be in canary or not. So I don't know. I feel like if people are really worried about this stuff, they shouldn't use the new thing. I don't think you should use the new thing if you don't if you're not expecting to hit bugs and edge cases and have to work through this kind of pain. So that's kind of my take, and I haven't migrated a large production app to AppRouter, so I can't really say from a personal standpoint whether it's like
Yeah.
fully baked or not. But some people think it's fine, some people hit a lot of issues. I think that if you are really worried about this kind of stuff, then just don't use it. Like, keep using the pages, way, and I think it'll probably work just fine. So no one's forcing anyone to migrate. Next hasn't deprecated non-app router usage as far as I'm aware. So I think that people should be more wary of migrating to the new stuff, and they shouldn't just expect everything to work perfectly.
Yeah, it's really interesting. We especially when we talk to we have a lot of large enterprise customers, and they treat upgrades and migrations to the latest version with care. Like it may seem like it works, but you never know when there's an edge case that broke, and especially on a large website that could have serious financial implications. So you do an upgrade and you put it through a full QA cycle, even if it seems like it's working. And I think web developers have been historically spoiled, and like on the long arc of web development, that most of the time you could take upgrades, or at least in the Next ecosystem. He says this in the blog post. He said, in the past, major version upgrades have been seamless, but not this one. And it's now seems interesting that web development has gotten to the point that, well, it feels like other software development. The framework, once it gets to a certain size, has a certain surface area, and the larger that, surface area is, the more care you have to take when you're migrating between versions.
Word. Did you check out the other articles about the migration?
No, actually, yeah. So I was about to say, the other articles I did not check out, but they seemed, well, I briefly skimmed them. That was the only one I read in depth of the AppRouter ones. What was your takeaway from those? They seemed a lot more positive. I mean, one was a case study. Yeah, go ahead.
They were, I think, having, and so it's kind of like I was saying, kind of has to do with, what your use case is. So I think for them, what they were building, it was more like kind of classic next apps. Like one was like, an e-commerce kind of thing. I'm sure you're familiar with Medusa, I'm sure.
Yep.
Yeah. And then the other one was kind of like a PWA type thing. So I think with something like that, those probably were, well suited and probably more in the sweet spot of what the app router is meant to do. And I think that's probably helps a lot. So yeah, and I would definitely recommend people check out these articles. I'll pin both of them. One is like the open task one is like really, really long. It's like basically a how-to and goes into all the code that is in the project. So if someone really wants to do this is going to be like the article to check out.
I mean, he's really clear that this is exactly that. This is a how to build case study. And it's, I think, entirely net new. Whereas the other one is explicitly about a migration. It's like what we learned actually transitioning. And he has the before and after code. And I didn't get a chance to go through the before and after examples that much. I don't know if you did. But what I was planning to and didn't get to was to look at them and say, well, do I feel like this looks, easier to maintain, and easier to understand and build than the before? I don't know if you got a chance to take a look at that.
Well, the whole, yeah, this is an interesting question because the easier to build thing, I is one is subjective, and two, it depends on where you're coming from. Because if someone already knows a ton about Next, they've learned how to use Next, they know all the Next conventions, they know how to build a project with it, then it's going to be very easy to do. And the new conventions with the app router and all this and React Server components will all seem very weird and foreign and strange. But if you knew nothing about Next and then you came to it now today and learned how to do it with the app router, then that would just be the way you know how to do it. And so I think it's a similar thing with like you go all the way back to class components versus hooks. People thought hooks was weird and strange at the time, and then people who learned through hooks look at class components, they're like, whoa, this is way harder, So I think it has to do slightly with just where are you gonna, what are you gonna learn, and what is going to seem like the normal way to do it. And usually, whatever you learn first is gonna be the easiest, and then learning something different is gonna be harder. Like, I think that's almost like a universal rule. Even if the new thing is easier, it will seem harder because it's different from what you already know.
Yeah, it's anything different from what you're used to. It's something you didn't have to think about, so to speak. Now you have to think about. As someone in the audience, Andrew just replied, and he said, "Grass is always greener." Andrew, if you want to raise your hand, we're happy to bring you up to the stage, and hear your take if you've been following these
Yeah,
articles.
he's also a host of one of my favorite podcasts, DevTools.fm.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah, great. So yeah, feel free to raise your hand. Would love
Yeah, I threw out
to hear
an
your take
invite
about
to him at
this.
the beginning, so no worries if you're not available. I'm going to throw it out to Brad as well, longtime JS Jam
Oh
speaker.
yeah.
Nice to have you up here if you can. Oh, looks like.
That might just crap out at some point.
No, you're good,
But
man. Thanks so much for joining.
yeah, no problem. Yeah, I that was mostly in response to like Brandon's article, like, oh, if we would have done it with Remix, it would have been better. But
Yeah.
I think anytime you say that, it's a grass is greener on the other side situation. It's like, oh yeah, everything would have been great and there would have been no problems, but there's trade-offs either way.
It's definitely a fair call out. Like it always looks like, you only see the warts of the project you're working on and all the benefits of the thing on the other side of the fence. So it's totally a fair call out. He did seem to indicate, though, he felt like the less magical aspect of Remix what to him felt like an advantage. I wonder if that's more if you're like an expert, like you want to know how the thing works, you don't want the magic, and that might also be like a persona fit type thing. I don't know if you had a thought on that.
I don't think it's that much magic. I think it's just like with
Yeah.
App Router, there's been a lot of FUD on Twitter like there's just like lots of people not understanding it and just lots of bickering going back and forth. Honestly, my take is that like Next.js app router should have been another Vercel product. Like it's utterly confusing to me when I go to the Next.js docs and there's like the pages router and the app router. Like it's essentially a new paradigm. It makes no sense to me that they're both Next.js.
Oh wow. So in your world, would it be a separate framework?
Yeah. After Next.js? Separate... I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you feel like maybe the criticism? So then what I was going to ask is, do you feel like this is a bit of a pylon unfairly, like a misunderstanding of the direction they're trying to take it? Or it sounds like they should have just left Next with the way it was set up and just said, hey, this is a new way for a different type of use case of app. This is a different framework, but still React.
Yeah, in my opinion, like it's just from the documentation standpoint, it is so hard to navigate. And like if I were a new person coming into like App Router, if App Router were the only docs and I had no way of like knowing about the other thing, like mm-hmm. it might be easy. But as a new person, I think I'd be utterly confused, just like going like, oh, I'm looking at next link, but oh, this is the wrong next link. It's like, oh, I want to like use the router. Oops, that's the wrong next router. Mm-hmm. So it's like, why couldn't it have just been another thing? Like in honestly, App Router to me feels like a reaction to Remix, and mm-hmm. it should have been a reaction in a separate repo. Like I'm all for the App Router like way to do things. Like it's a fun way to code. It's a fun way to encapsulate things. But just to mix the frameworks, like in my opinion, if you have a big enough breaking change, that's a new library. It's not a breaking change on a past library. And Next.js 13 is pretty deep into the majors. So to me, it just makes sense for it to be a separate project.
Yeah, it's a really interesting.
Do you feel like,
it's yeah, a really interesting point.
Go ahead.
I feel like that would be nice, but how many people would really use it? You know, by forcing all the Next people to migrate it, it ensures your entire Next ecosystem ends up on it. Whereas if they had done that, maybe everyone would have just ignored it.
Maybe. But like, I think they still plan to support the pages router going forward. So it's like, it's not like the pages router is the old dead way of doing things. It's still just as much a priority as the app router, if you're to believe the tweets.
What are you saying, Sean?
I wonder if part of the problem here is the surface area of problems that the framework is trying to solve is just getting too expansive. Is like, if I was, you know, I agree with Anthony. I think, why would you throw away the momentum and awareness and traction you get from being part of the existing framework? But I can understand how, if the paradigm is so different, you know, I think, for example, of Angular, right? The switch from Angular 1 or Angular JS, right? And it was so different, it should have been considered like a separate framework. And they that was more fundamental, I guess, because the underlying architecture changed. And so maybe it's more dramatic. But I wonder if maybe that's part of the thing here, is that it's trying to do too much and satisfy too many use cases and too many stakeholders.
Yeah, that's fair. Like one interesting thing I found while rebuilding my website with the new app router is that it kind of feels like it's static is a lot less like easy. Like so for my use case, I just wanted to have some markdown files that were deployed along with my app. I spent far too much time actually getting the text files or the modules included with my like deployed app. And it's just like, isn't like Next.js supposed to be this easy thing where I have a very simple website, I can generate things statically, and then I ended up having to go through all this stuff to like get Webpack to know about the modules so they would be included, so I could do things like doing like a search in a React server component that would just like read the markdown files and do some stuff to them. So like just that was hard. So it's like Next.js to me was originally very much static website stuff, but there's kind of some like hard edges to the new app router that don't make static as easy anymore.
I believe it. It's actually, that is the too many use cases, right? Yeah. Like Next.js, I think first started non-static, then it incorporated static as Jamstack got important, doing things like ISR and other forms like that, other forms of rendering. And then, you know, now, you know, Jamstack has kind of been retired as a term a little bit, and isn't as important. I can see how it can be de-emphasized, but you've got this legacy of all those decision points in there.
Are you sure it's not a thing anymore?
Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm being a little dramatic on that. But I've just been listening to, for example, the folks at Cloud Cannon have a series they're doing on you know, What the Jam. And it's basically about like, what is Jamstack now? And how does it get defined? And, you know, two or three years ago at JavaScript Jam, we had about two or three different episodes on, you know, what is the new definition of Jamstack? And we even had a panel on it. But what is your opinion?
Yeah, we got resident RSC advocate Dev with us now.
Yeah,
I was referring to the talk Matt Billman did called Jamstack 2024. It was hilarious and a fun watch.
Oh, I haven't seen that. How did I miss that?
Yeah, it's in Jamstack, the newsletter.
Oh, in Brian's newsletter. I haven't, I must have missed that. Okay. Let me see.
But do you have thoughts on the topic at hand, Dev?
Can I get a like quick refresher on what it is, what the context is?
We're talking about like, you know, AppRouter, whether Andrew was suggesting that what if AppRouter had been a new Vercel product or just like a new framework or was kind of decoupled from Next entirely.
Then it wouldn't have the name recognition that Next.js has and wouldn't have as much traction.
Vercel's a pretty big company. Like Vercel can put out more products and they'll be successful. I don't think Next.js is the last product they make.
That's a good point.
That's fair. They're building new products for sure, but I think the name recognition that Next.js already had as the like the best way to set up React and SSR and everything, it made sense that that with server components, it's like the next evolution of Next.js rather than a completely new framework.
I will say from talking to folks in the enterprise, you know, if they hear, well, more so React, but you know, it's a recognized name and it can become like, you know, no one ever got fired for choosing Microsoft. Regardless of where you decide to host it, if you're like, oh, you're using that. Okay. Yes. I know people who use this framework. It just becomes a little bit of a sometimes undeserved like passport that says, oh, okay. Yeah. That's a sensible choice. Even if it's the wrong choice for the particular use case you're focused on.
Yeah. There's definitely some of that. I've been recently, listening to the Primogen on similar topics for quite a bit. Where he talks about like, if you have used a certain tool and if you have used it over and over again, it doesn't matter how bad the tool is, you just get better at using that tool to build something valuable. So there's definitely some of that plays in here.
Yeah, that makes sense. We're almost at the top of the hour. I did want to get to the million JS.
Well, perfect. Toby just showed up also. Yeah, so I
see that as well. Yeah. So why don't you just quickly summarize and then I have a question or two about that I thought we could tackle. Go ahead.
Well, first, are there any kind of last thoughts from either Dev or Andrew on the Next or AppRouter topic?
Go build cool shit. That's all I got.
Yeah, what he said.
Awesome. Yeah, so Million is a project that we've already been talking about for a while on JavaScript Jam and is, I think, a very cool project. And they just recently released their V3. Hopefully we can get Toby up here to talk about it a little bit. But, you know, the thing they're really focused on is, you know, performance. And so you got improvements on hydration and a new compiler, which is going to help with supporting TypeScript and will handle a lot of interesting compiler-y type stuff. It seems like a lot of compiler work is now being done in React world, either in React Core or in React Frameworks. We've also got some internationalization additions. The docs and the website supports multiple languages now. And then one thing that I don't know a whole lot about, but sounds pretty interesting, is something called Million Wrapped, which is for providing a tool that can kind of showcase the performance improvements in your app. So I know they're always big on, you know, when you migrate from React to Million, really seeing what is the performance increases that you're getting from it. And yeah, it also mentions that the team is looking for new people. I know that Aiden had gotten some funding from Tyler Cowen's Emergent Ventures project, which is pretty sweet. So it's great to see that the project is really getting some uptick and some support, some financial support. So yeah, if people are interested in checking out Million, it seems like now is a really good time to get into it. I'd be curious if either Dev or Andrew have tried it out.
I haven't tried it out myself. From what I understand about it, it's mostly for like large virtual lists, basically. And the app I work on, Descript, doesn't have much of that. I would be interested to see if it helps, but like the Descript front end app is quite complex.
Yeah, I think it's just like it's if you have a lot of diffing, a lot of like virtual DOM stuff, so it doesn't necessarily have to be a list. But it's like heavy DOM manipulation is what it's aimed at.
So I think the first question somebody might ask is how does this relate to something like React Forget, which is not live yet but is coming. And I know Aiden's I think addressed this on Twitter in the past, but do you have a succinct way to kind of describe it? My understanding is React Forget's more about the rendering, and this is more about the reconciliation. Is that still the case with Million?
I believe so. Yeah, that's I'm gonna pin this this tweet here that he has about it. That's the sense I've gotten from it as well. And it's one of those things I've heard him explain it multiple times, and I feel like I don't really fully understand it well enough to explain it myself. So I'm just gonna point people to this post here. We got some other people also
might be the one
sharing stuff also. We have put Dev's Jamstack 2024 up here. Oh, it looks like Toby's not able to hop up right now. He said he's in a noisy environment. But no worries. We appreciate you being in the audience.
I can try to expand more on the rendering versus reconciliation. And
yeah, go for it.
Like whatever. My understanding of Million.js and the block DOM technology behind it, I kind of think of it as like this. Like if you think of the UI that you're creating as this sort of like a sea of a bunch of different UI components, or it's like a VDOM components, then block DOM basically looks at like parts of that, like that sea that don't really change. Like honestly, islands is kind of a like an island within the sea, but I don't want to like refer to islands as an astro, but basically parts of your UI that don't really change that often. For example, if you have three divs in a row and then you have like a span with some value inside of it, let's say that only the value changes, then really the only thing that needs to change is the text inside the span. The other divs, they don't really need to be re-rendered much. So it basically looks at, it tries to figure out what are those blocks of UI that kind of go together, or they don't really have structural changes within them, And those blocks are kind of like what it optimizes for, because React will treat everything as kind of the exact same thing, but Million can recognize the difference between blocks that don't change and dynamic holes inside them where we put values. And that's my understanding. I could be somewhat wrong here, but that's at least how I think of where will Million best work in my application.
And is it fair to say that's kind of like what, say, Solid tries to do automatically, although not in React?
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah. Basically understand the dynamic versus, shall we call them, the static nodes, and then optimize the reconciliation performance based on that.
Yeah, both React Forget and Million, they try to like solve the same inefficiency problems of the VDOM in like from like different directions, and they both together. Mm-hmm. I think if they both can be used together, you kind of approach what something like SolidJS or Svelte Runes is trying to do, which is like one thing can optimize from the reconciliation part, take the blocks that don't have to re-render often, and then React Forget on the other side can manage the state inside your components, where
yep.
when one value changes, it only re-renders the UI that needs to change.
Yeah, for
it's like automatic memoization. Oh, sorry.
Yeah,
Forget's a lot easier for me to like understand. It's like, oh, I don't have to write like most of the callback and all that type of code anymore. The Million's promise is a lot harder for you to wrap your head around, because it's like, oh, it just makes things fast. And it's like, I wish there was some like way to measure it or like detect areas. I know they have like a new Million lint project, but just like being able to see the value I'm getting from it, I just don't feel like it's there without me doing like a lot of investigation first.
I think that's another kind of a good value prop of Million, is that it never really like de-opts anything. So the worst case scenario is that your app is exactly as performant as it would be without Million. And obviously like that's the worst case scenario, and you can get anytime it finds blocks that it can optimize, it basically like provides an incremental performance gain.
I think maybe that was the motivation for the other thing that jumped out at me in the release, which was Million Wrapped, which, you know, you mentioned earlier, Anthony, but it's basically, let me advertise the impact or make it easier to advertise the effect.
Yeah, I mean, goes down the list of all your components and says this component render is now 22% faster. So that seems like that'll really give you like very detailed, fine-grained information about how this is affecting your performance, which is pretty cool.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I would say that's like a really savvy kind of, from a product management, like an element of delight that makes a lot of sense to include into the package. Like in an enterprise product, very often it's like you want to show the lower TCO or the ROI. And the more you can bake it into the product, the better. This was, a hat tip there for putting that kind of thing right into the framework. That was clever.
Yeah, and I love that Andrew brought up like that you have to investigate quite a bit to figure out where the performance gains are. I think from what I've heard, and I've also talked to Aiden a bit, I think that's the exact part that they're looking to improve a lot more, where their compiler not only has like it, not only can it optimize your components, it can also like look at and statically analyze your components, or at runtime analyze your components, and together like it gives you a much better insight into what components I think Anthony brought up earlier that it re-renders these many times, or it has become this much faster now, or it points out ways where you can optimize the component on your own. So it's almost like a better dev tool for React performance.
Very cool. I have to, it's the top of the hour and I have to drop.
Yep. Yeah, we can wrap it up. Also, I just pinned DevTools has an episode on Million, so if people want to check that out. For the people up here, you want to give a little pitch of who you are and what people should check you out with?
Sure. I'm the co-host of DevTools.fm. We're a podcast about developer tools and the people who make them. We like to interview people who are making like the developer tools you use and may use in the future. and get to why they made them and the story behind it and the like the future of their field. So the talk with Aiden was pretty fun. If you don't know, he created Million while he was in high school as a TA in another class. So it's a pretty inspiring story to see that. And we have a bunch of those with all the episodes we have.
Yeah, he's one of those kids like Nexel who created Create T through Apple in high school. They are going places, let me tell you. And then Dev, you're looking for a job, right?
Yeah, I am. I recently entered the job market. I'm not super excited about it, but here I am. So if you or someone you know could use my skills, hit me up.
Yeah, definitely recommend hitting up Dev if you want a software engineer, developer advocate. You could do either, I think. So yeah, definitely has the skills to pay the bills. Awesome. So thank you so much for joining, everyone. This is a very fun conversation. Thank you, Andrew and Dev, for coming up and joining the conversation. And we will be back in 2 weeks to talk about more JavaScript Jam news of the week. Anything else you wanted to say, Ishan?
Nope. Thank you, everyone. And look forward to seeing you in 2 weeks.
All right. Bye, everyone.